Back in 1947, there was a Bedouin shepherd chasing around some goats in the region near the Dead Sea over in the Israel area. And he thought one of his goats might have gone into one of the caves that were very common in that region. And so he threw a rock into a cave, and instead of hearing the goat bleat, or whatever goats do when they get hit by a rock, he heard pottery shattering. And he thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder what's in that cave. So he clambered up into the cave, and he found a bunch of clay pots and other materials. Inside the clay pots were some written materials. He didn't know what they were. They looked pretty old. And so he took them to somebody who might know what they were. He ended up selling them, and they sold them to somebody else, and I think they sold them to somebody else. Eventually, some antiquities authorities recognized what these materials were, and they became known as the Dead Sea Scrolls. In the materials, was a copy of the book of Isaiah. It's now called the Great Scroll of Isaiah. If you ever go to Jerusalem, you can see it in the Museum of the Book over there. You can see a facsimile of it, at least. This copy of Isaiah was 1,000 years older than any other copy of Isaiah in existence to that point. So it was a very significant find, the Dead Sea Scrolls. And typically when we think about the importance of those scrolls, we think about how much value they have to us today. In fact, those scrolls were sold in 1954 for $250,000. In today's money, that would be $2.7 million. Could you imagine finding a clay pot, opening it up, and finding $2.7 million in there? Now everybody's going to go home and start throwing rocks into caves to see if they can find something worth a lot of money. Well, typically speaking, we don't talk about the Dead Sea pots or the clay vessels that the Dead Sea Scrolls were in. We think about the Dead Sea Scrolls themselves. The value was in the scrolls, not in the pots. Well, interestingly, Paul, in our passage today, talks about treasure stored in earthen vessels, clay pots, in other words. The gospel is a great treasure, and those who have the gospel and those who proclaim it are like clay pots. Unfortunately, clay pots are weak and easily damaged. Paul tells us in this context that about some of the damage that he has experienced in his life and ministry. One of the themes in the book of 2 Corinthians is the difficulty, the problems involved in Christian ministry. At the very beginning of the church, as believers were spreading the gospel through the Roman Empire, they faced some enormous obstacles. They endured persecution, harassment, and opposition. They faced imprisonment and death in many cases. And yet this opposition could not prevent the early believers from spreading the gospel far and wide. Well, today, unfortunately, we are facing some similar kinds of opposition and hostility in our culture today. In the nation that was founded on Christian principles, we today are facing a lot of opposition for standing for Christian principles. Large parts of our society have rejected the Bible, and we are now living in a post-Christian world. Many today see biblical morality as old-fashioned, odd, and even offensive. The majority of our country no longer values the Bible, the church, or Christian morality. Many promote and defend wicked, anti-biblical, perverse, and profane ideas and behaviors. So we today in our world, in our nation, in our society, we face considerable opposition and hostility to the gospel message and to the Christian lifestyle, just like they did almost 2,000 years ago. We are approaching, I think, a time in our society where we will be facing almost the same kinds of opposition and hostility to the Christian gospel as what the early believers faced. Well, this section of our text in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 talks about some of the trials, but also the results of Christian ministry. Paul tells us here about some of the troubles that he has experienced, but also some of the results of those troubles. And the obvious implication here is that the trouble is worth the costs because of the results. Christian ministry can be very difficult. We can face all kinds of obstacles and harassment and persecution, but the results make it all worth the effort. So if people are being saved and God is receiving the glory, then the the work is worth it. And likewise, if we engage in Christian ministry today, we will likewise experience some of these obstacles, afflictions, and trials that Paul talks about here. Now, we probably won't, at least not in the current day and age, we probably won't experience the same kind of imprisonment, threats of death, persecution like Paul received. I don't think most of us are going to be beaten within an inch of our lives. We're probably not going to be stoned to death like Paul probably was. But we will receive some opposition, some hostility. But these problems, these difficulties, this opposition should not prevent us from serving in Christian ministry. Obviously, there are problems, there are difficulties that we'll talk about in a moment, but we should still persevere. We should still be involved in Christian ministry in spite of the problems. It's a great privilege to contain the treasure of the gospel and also convey it to others. This is one of the themes that we find in the text. Like those vessels, like those earthen vessels, we contain the truth. We have this treasure in earthly vessels, and now we are to convey it to others. And it's a great privilege to be used of God to be involved in Christian ministry. Perhaps some here today would consider pursuing Christian ministry as a vocation. Most of us are going to be serving the Lord as volunteers. But I think there are people, perhaps within our church, that God would raise up to serve God vocationally, perhaps to be a pastor or to be a missionary or something like that, maybe in one of the support roles, perhaps being in a Christian camp or Christian radio, something like that, where you're serving the Lord vocationally. And that's a wonderful thing. But we should not have too much of a rosy picture, you might say, unreasonable or expectations of the Christian ministry that are not reasonable or not true. Sometimes, especially as people grow up or they have an idea of the ministry being very wonderful and everybody loves you and everything's great and everything is roses, well, Paul's description of the ministry here is not rosy. It is very difficult. And so we want to encourage people from our church, especially young people as they grow up, encourage people to think about or at least consider vocational ministry, being a pastor, being a missionary, being maybe a person working at a Christian camp or something like that. That's a great thing to do. But there are hazards, there are problems, there are difficulties. So let's today consider what Paul says about the trials and the results of Christian ministry. Today we'll look at the trials and the hardships, and then next time, Lord willing, when we reconvene, probably in 2 or 3 weeks from now, I guess, we'll look at the positive results that make the costs worth the effort. So today we're looking at pretty much the hazards, the problems, the trials, the hardships that Paul mentions in this passage. So notice, first of all, the trials of ministry may be many and severe. Notice in verse 7, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. That's the word for clay pot, okay? We have this treasure in earthen vessels. And so the first thing here is that the physical body is weak and fragile. Paul describes himself. That's what he's talking about here. He's not talking about the Dead Sea Scrolls. He's talking about himself as an earthen vessel, as a clay pot. He says, we have it, in the sense of himself and his colleagues, and really Christians in general, those who are serving the Lord in ministry. We have a great treasure, but it's within pots. It's within earthen vessels. It's within clay pots. So what is the meaning here? What is the comparison between clay pots and himself or ourselves? How are we like clay pots? Well, I think there are a couple of things at least. First of all, clay pots are fairly fragile. Like I mentioned with the Dead Sea Scrolls, that guy who threw the rock into the cave trying to chase out his goat, he hit a clay pot and it shattered. And we know that clay pots, or things that are made out of clay, typically are not the most robust things in the world. It's not like it's made out of aluminum or stainless steel. It's made out of clay. And clay is not particularly robust and strong. Clay chips, it breaks, it cracks fairly easily. And we all know that the human body is fairly fragile. It is weak in some respects. We are mortal. We are subject to all kinds of problems. Physical problems that we go through. People in the last few days have talked to me about some of the physical problems, and some of you are going through some of these physical problems right now, physical ailments or diseases or medical issues that you need to take care of. And we recognize the human body, especially as it ages, it just naturally starts to break down little by little. And that's part of the fact that we are clay pots. We are made of dust. You know, we are not all that robust and strong. The human body is rather like a clay pot in its weaknesses and imperfection. Clay pots also are not particularly valuable. Back in the old days, clay pots were fairly a mundane, regular item of normal family existence. Every family, every household had a bunch of clay pots laying around. And it wasn't as if you even repaired one. Let's say you tipped one over and it chipped or it broke or it cracked. They were inexpensive enough that you could just throw them away and get a new one. So clay pots were fairly cheap and not terribly valuable. Clay pots, I think of them as the Ziploc bags or the cheap plastic containers of the ancient world. At our house, we have some cheap plastic containers. They're Cool Whip containers. Do any of you keep Cool Whip containers? Well, we have about a dozen of them up in our cabinet and in our kitchen. And if I ever need something, like if I need something in the shop or I need to drain some oil in the, you know, from a motor, or if I need to put some paint thinner or something in something, I go and grab one of these Cool Whip containers because they are cheap, they're abundant. If I mess one up, you know, if you have a Cool Whip container and you crack it, do you try to repair it? Well, no, you just throw it out and you go grab another one. It's not very valuable. And that's sort of the idea here as well with the clay pot. It's not that the treasure is the earthen vessel. The treasure is in the earthen vessel. We have this treasure. This gospel is what he's talking about. We have that within us. If you're saved, you have the gospel message, and it's a great value. It's a great treasure. But it's not that we are the treasure, although, of course, we have value, but that's not the emphasis here. Paul is not talking about himself in terms of fine china or a golden goblet. He's talking about a cheap, common earthenware container, ordinary, average, everyday clay pots. That's how he pictures himself, an ordinary, expendable vessel, just a vessel. The gospel message is the treasure, but not so much the messenger who carries the treasure. The Dead Sea Scrolls were valuable, but not so much those clay pots. And so the picture here is of human helplessness, weakness, and fragility. The demands of ministry, he's talking here in this passage, this whole context, is about Christian ministry, being involved in ministry, how Paul and his companions were serving the Lord in ministry, and the difficulties that they faced. And so Christian ministry is difficult, and we, because we're humans, we are weak and fragile and fail and prone to failure, prone to breaking, prone to chipping, prone to destruction very easily. However, human weakness is part of God's plan. God knows that we are weak and frail and prone to failure. 2 Corinthians 12:9 says, "My strength is made perfect in what? Weakness. My strength is made perfect through weakness." So God knows that we are weak, frail individuals. In Psalm 103 verse 14, it says, "He knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are," what? "Dust." God made us from the dust of the ground, and that's essentially what we are. And so he knows our frame, he knows our weaknesses, he knows our failures, our proneness to fail. God understands that. And so Christian ministry depends on ordinary, average clay pots, average, normal Christians. God has entrusted us with a great treasure, and it's our responsibility to serve God and others with that treasure in spite of our weaknesses. We might be able to list all kinds of weaknesses and failures, but still God expects us to serve him with the treasure that he's given us in spite of our weaknesses and failures. Maybe you think of yourself as nothing more than a clay pot. Well, that's okay. Clay pots typically have a few chips and cracks. God can use clay pots. They play an enormous role in God's program. So don't exclude yourself from Christian ministry by saying, "Oh, I don't have any special skills. I'm just kind of a normal person. I'm nothing special." Well, that's what clay pots are. Nothing special, nothing particularly great about them, nothing to be remarked about, about a clay pot. I'm just an average person. God can use average, mundane, ordinary people. Old Cool Whip containers have good uses. There's good reason to keep them around. And so maybe that's all we are. We're not a golden goblet. We're not a Grecian urn. We're just an old clay pot. Well, that's okay. The fact that we are clay pots is not an excuse for sin. clearly. We can't say, well, I'm nothing but a clay pot, so I'm excused for my sin and failure, morally speaking, or something like that. But it certainly does explain the fact that we have weaknesses and failures. God uses ordinary people, even, as it were, crackpots. Some of us are kind of crackpotty, and God can use people like that as well. So the first point here is that the human body, the clay pot, is rather weak and fragile. Also, we go on to find here that Christian ministry is often very difficult. And now from verses 8 through 12, we find these difficulties, and Paul puts them in terms of, we are this, but not that. So we see kind of a contrast. We have this going on, this difficulty, but it has not stopped us from serving the Lord. So I'm going to be looking primarily at the first part that he says, we have this difficulty, but then next time I'll look at the good thing that goes along with it, okay? So we have this list of difficulties that they experienced in their ministry, and this was their experience as they're going around the Mediterranean world, planting churches, serving the Lord, trying to bring the gospel to people like the people in Corinth, and how much difficulty they experienced doing that. So notice, first of all, in verse 8, he said, we are hard-pressed, and I'll just be looking at these terms and trying to give the meaning of these terms. This word hard-pressed means squashed like a grape, afflicted, distressed, or troubled. In fact, Paul uses the word 12 times describing his ministry. 12 times we have the same word. And so obviously a lot of this had happened. There's been a lot of distress, a lot of pressure, a lot of squashing going on. That was his experience. The word emphasizes the pressures of ministry. And note that he says here in verse 8, we are hard-pressed, squashed, pressured, as it were, on every side. So there's a multitude of things going on in Paul's life, and it seems like he's getting pressure from every side. Some of you know what that's like. You feel pressure all over your entire existence. And so those who serve God in ministry often experience many different forms of pressure. It could be physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, familial, perhaps, or financial. Part of Christian ministry is the pressure that mounts up on those who are engaged in it. At times, it seems like that pressure is on us on every side. It seems like all aspects of life have some sort of pressure. And when we're in Christian ministry, it just becomes very difficult because of all these pressures. You perhaps have heard of burnout in Christian ministry, how that pastors or missionaries or evangelists, people who are serving God vocationally, they just get to the point where they've had enough. They can't do it anymore. They're burnt out because, typically, of these pressures involved in the ministry. It could be a physical thing. It could be others who are pressuring them. It could be just the everyday, you know, concerns of ministry. But there are a lot of people, a lot of pastors and missionaries who experience a kind of burnout. They've burnt the candle, as it were, on both ends, and they got no candle left. They've just pushed and pushed and pushed. I'm aware of some great missionaries, in fact, who died at like 55 or 60 years old because they just burned themselves out. I mean, they were so zealous and on fire for the Lord that they died an early death because they just used up all the energy that they had. Well, unfortunately, it is a tragic situation, I think, when pastors particularly, or those in ministry work, those who are missionaries, feel these pressures that causes burnout or causes them to lose heart or faint. Notice in chapter 4, verse 1, he talks about, therefore, having this ministry, we have received mercy, and we do not lose heart. We do not faint. We do not quit. Even though these pressures were on Paul, he didn't quit. Well, unfortunately, we face pressurized situations sometimes in ministry, and oftentimes those pressures come from the fact that we're dealing with people, and people have problems, and problems can cause pressure. Some of you are probably aware that within the WFBC, the Wisconsin Fellowship of Churches that we're part of, there are at any one time, there are 10 to 12 or 15 churches that are without pastors. And sometimes it's just because one pastor's moved along, but probably for maybe two or three of these churches that are perennially without a pastor, it's because these churches are not conducive, you might say, to pastors being there. In other words, they are the type of churches that just chew up and spit out one pastor after another. A pastor will come in there for two or three, four or five years, and then they've had enough. And those people are just so whatever, unkind or hostile, oppositional to that pastor, he just says, fine, I've had enough. I'm aware of a situation like that somewhat locally where the people of the church put enough pressure on the pastor that he just up and left. He'd had enough. And he's gone on to another ministry and is doing very well at another ministry where the people of that church support and encourage and appreciate what he's doing. But there are churches that the people in the church itself can be so oppositional and hostile to the work of the pastor, and it puts so much pressure on him and his family that he just can't take it anymore, and he moves on. And that's a very unfortunate thing, and I'm not saying that that's happened here. The very opposite has happened here to me, but I'm aware of other places, and when we go down to the annual meeting, I almost always hear stories from other people and the ministry that they have and how much opposition that they're facing. And I thank the Lord that I don't receive that kind of opposition here. But there are people in churches who are so pressurized, they're in such a cauldron of pressure that they just say, forget it. Either they burnt out or they just can't handle it anymore. They move on, or and sometimes they even quit. So those involved in Christian ministry often experience pressure, difficulty, problems, like a grape being squished. We can have that experience in Christian ministry. He goes on to say in verse 8, we are hard-pressed, and then at the end of the verse, we are perplexed. Perplexed is another word, meaning without resources, at a loss, uncertain, anxious. You know, there are a lot of frustrations in ministry. Sometimes people come to me with their questions and problems, and sometimes these problems, especially family issues, can be very complex, very convoluted, and they come and they say, Pastor, what should I do? And I go, what did they teach me in seminary about that problem? Nothing. We never touched on that one in seminary. All I can do is say, okay, what does the Bible say? You know, what are the advice that the Bible writers would give us about that problem? And sometimes, frankly, I say, here's what I would do. I'll try to give you my best advice. I'll try to be biblical and sound about what it is. But oftentimes these are very complex things. And I think, I have nothing to contribute. I don't know what to say. It's a very frustrating thing. It's, as the word says, without resources, at a loss. I don't know. Boy, you tell me your family story and tell me you want advice on what to do. And I think to myself, oh my goodness, I don't know how you're going to get out of that one. Well, I'm at a loss. I'm frustrated. I don't know what to do. Pray. Sometimes that's all I can say is pray. So, I mean, that's part of ministry as well. People have high expectations. They expect you to solve their problems. Sometimes it's very frustrating because you give people good biblical advice and they don't follow it. They don't accept it. They turn away and they rebel. They reject the advice that you give them. So this can be very frustrating. You feel like you're at a loss. You don't know what to do. In verse 9, he goes on and uses the word persecuted. This word literally means hunted, chased, like a criminal or a fugitive hunted by the police. Some people in Christian ministry actually experience this physically. They are hunted down and arrested. Michael Garmy, in his last update newsletter, he talked about a guy in Iran who just converted to Christ, and he was hunted down and arrested by the authorities there. I'm not sure if he's still in jail, but this is what happens in some of these nations where it's illegal to be a Christian. You are literally hunted down and put in prison or harassed or persecuted or even tortured for your faith. So Paul experienced that many times. Struck down is the next word that he uses in verse 9 here. Persecuted, struck down. This means to suffer, to be badly hurt, to be laid low, to be abused, even to be killed. In fact, the word is used in another context, I thought it was kind of funny, of a wrestler throwing an opponent to the floor. Have you ever felt, this is the imagery that came up in my convoluted mind, the imagery of a body slam. Do you know what it means to be body slammed, like in professional wrestling? Not that I watched, but I did as a kid. I'm sorry about that, but I did. So to be body slammed, have you ever felt that in ministry, like you're serving God and then something comes along and you feel like, man, you just slammed to the ground? Well, that's what he feels as well. And Paul he lists in various places all these difficulties that he went through. Here's 1 Corinthians 4. He says, to the present hour we both hunger and thirst, and are poorly clothed, and beaten, and homeless. Being reviled, we bless. Being persecuted, we endure. Being defamed, we entreat. We have been made as the filth of the world, the offscouring of all things until now. So you get the sense that Paul went through the ringer. I mean, he really experienced some terrible things in his life, some real genuine persecution. He was struck down. He was badly hurt. He was abused. He was almost killed. And in fact, some people think that he actually was killed, at least on one occasion. Paul experienced floggings, stonings, mobbings, imprisonment, labors, shipwreck, muggings, sleepless nights, exposure, thirst, and hunger. He was near death many times. There were several times that he basically just escaped death by the skin of his teeth. So we may experience, and I think probably we will in the not too distant future, there may be physical things like this, real, genuine persecution. That's not generally happening today in our country, but there's other forms of abuse or persecution as well. It may not be physical, but it could be mental. It could be some other financial or a spiritual abuse of some sort. Many pastors face personal antagonism and opposition every time they get up to preach. Every Sunday, they look out on church members who have a personal vendetta against them. They deal with people who are trying to undercut and sabotage their ministry. I thought of a friend that I know in ministry who told me years ago about a guy in his church who basically made his ministry a misery, put a whole lot of pressure on him to quit, undercut everything that he said, and he made it so that this fellow pastor that I know almost quit. He was very inclined to quit. And fortunately, they came to, I think, some kind of resolution on this. But that kind of a thing, when you know, every time you stand up, you see some guy or some person or a family who are just dead set against your ministry, trying to undercut you, trying to oppose you at every time that they can. And you have to stand there and you deal with these people and they're opposing you and they're criticizing you and they're trying to do everything against you. Well, that can be very taxing. Like I talked about pressure, that can be very abusive. And a lot of pastors, frankly, just won't put up with that for too long. And so, again, I'm not talking about any conditions here. I'm very glad that that's not happening here. But it does happen in many churches. And so this is often why pastors just throw in the towel and quit. Going on then, verse 10, he says, always carrying about in the body the dying of our Lord Jesus. Jesus fulfilled his goals, of course, through suffering and death. And it may be that death or even suffering of some kind is part of God's providence for us as well. As an apostle, Paul was the representative, the spokesman for Jesus. And as such, Paul experienced similar forms of mistreatment. Jesus was beaten, abused, mocked, and eventually murdered. And the early Christian experience was very similar, a similar kind of mistreatment. They faced constant peril and impending death. The text literally says here, always the dying of Jesus in the body bearing. The emphasis seems to be on the fact that they are constantly under the threat of death. And he uses a kind of an interesting word for death here. It's not the typical word just for dying. It's the word that means something like a rotting corpse, the putrefying flesh, the decay of death. He's always associated with the stench, you might say, of death. And of course, that's because he was around death all the time. People were pursuing him. People were trying to take his life. His life was in imminent danger all the time. He says this was always the case. So imagine being on the run, like if you were a murderer or something like that on the run, and people are pursuing you all the time to take away your life or to take you to jail. Well, Paul experienced something similar to that. He wasn't running for his life, obviously, because of anything wrong that he had done. But like a criminal, he was pursued. He was, you know, people were trying to arrest him. People were trying to kill him all the time. And so he also mentions that this happened in the body, always caring about in the body, the dying of the Lord Jesus. So I think he's talking here about the physical cost of Christian ministry. All these trials and tribulations had an adverse effect on the human body. Just like Jesus bore the scars after his death, so Paul bore the marks of his loyalty to Christ. In fact, in Galatians 6:17, Paul says, I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. So knowing what we know about Paul, Do you suppose that he had a lot of scars? He was beaten. He was flogged. He was stoned. He was shipwrecked. I imagine the guy's body was a wreck. Remember, he talked about a thorn in the side, so that was kind of a disease of some sort, a frailty or an ailment of some sort. But then, what would you feel like if you had been stoned, even potentially stoned to death? If you had been beaten with rods, if you'd been flogged within an inch of your life several times, what would your back look like? I imagine this guy was just filled with scars. I see him as sort of like hobbling along. I would guess that unless the Lord just totally, you know, renewed and restored his body, I would guess that the guy would be filled with scars and all the problems that would go along with that kind of a lifestyle. You know, there are many people today around the world who are Christians who do the same, who bear in their body the marks of their loyalty to Christ. People who've been in prison, people who've been beaten, people who've been persecuted, and they can show you, if they would, the scars that they bear because of their loyalty to Christ. Well, as we think about the trials that we endure for Christian ministry, I mean, none of us, as far as I know, have any scars. Well, I guess maybe my wife does because she fell off of here and broke her arm. She does have scars, and she was doing that in the middle of VBS, so I guess that's a scar that she bears. But most of us, I don't think, we probably can't point to scars that we bear because of our loyalty to Christ or our service to Christ, our ministry for Christ. Here are the scars of my beatings. Here's the time that I got stoned almost to death. You know, we can't say that. And so Paul endured even after all these things, and I think that gives us motivation to endure ourselves. Verse 11, "For we who live are always delivered to death." This word "delivered" literally means to be handed over or to be betrayed. Betrayed. I think Paul probably was betrayed in certain cases by those who were maybe thought of as his friends. There's an interesting story about William Tyndale way back in the 1500s. Tyndale was an Englishman, a scholar who was trying to translate the Bible into English, and that was against the law at the time. So he went to Belgium and was busy translating the Bible and had done a lot of translation work, but they still wanted to arrest and imprison and actually kill him. So he was like on the lam. He was doing this secretly. And a fellow from England, a guy named Phillips, came over to Antwerp, Belgium, where Tyndale was, and kind of made friends with him, became a supporter, but actually he was an agent sent by the British government. And after he had ingratiated himself and made himself a friend of Tyndale, he betrayed him to the authorities. They arrested him. Eventually, they killed him. Well, I don't know if you've ever been betrayed by a friend. I don't know if you've ever been betrayed in the context of ministry. I don't think it's happened to me here, but it has happened to me. I can give you the details of a time when I was involved in ministry and the people that I thought of as my friends turned away from me and attacked me. Well, unfortunately, that can happen in ministry. And this is a difficulty. That's one of the problems that are sometimes involved in Christian ministry. The people that you're trying to serve, the people that you think of as your friends, can easily turn against you and attack you. And then finally, in verse 12, he says, "So then death is working in us." And again, that just shows how close to death the apostles and their co-workers were at certain times, where they were hounded, persecuted, they were under the threat of death very often. Somebody put it this way: Christ crucified is not only Paul's message, but it's also his model. He has become the suffering apostle of the suffering Messiah. Paul knew suffering beyond the imagination of many, but endured because he also knew the power of resurrection. And he goes on to talk about resurrection later on in the text. So Paul knew the suffering Messiah, and he himself was suffering for Christ. He was on the edge of death. He was next to death. Even the aroma of death was around him because of his experience. So these are the trials and tribulations of the Christian ministry. For Paul and his companions, they endured all these hazards. Notice two reasons as we finish up here. In verse 11, he talks about, "We who are live are always delivered to death for what? For Jesus' sake." We're doing this for the Lord's sake. We're willing to endure all these things for the Lord. This is our service to the Lord. God has called us into this ministry, and we are serving for Jesus' sake. But also notice verse 15. All things are for your sakes, for the sake of those who are serving. So we can persist, we can continue, we can persevere in Christian ministry for those two reasons. We're doing it for the Lord, ultimately, and we're doing it for the people, God's people. We're serving God's people, we're serving the Lord by serving God's people. So let's say they oppose us. Well, I'm not doing it primarily for you. I mean, I'm doing it for your sakes, but ultimately I'm doing it for the Lord. Let's say they don't applaud. They don't give us a great big high five every time we do our ministry. You know, they're not all that excited about what we're doing. Well, we're serving them, but ultimately we're doing it for the Lord's sake. And so those who serve God are willing to risk their lives and face the constant threat of death, like Paul was, out of service for Christ and for the benefit of those who would be saved. If you engage in Christian ministry, expect opposition and hostility. You probably won't suffer like the Apostle Paul did, but it will be costly and uncomfortable at times. You may experience opposition and hostility. We should expect that and not be surprised by it. It should not deter us. We must endure these trials and not lose heart or quit. Serving the Lord is often difficult. It is often costly and troublesome. It's often inconvenient. Those of you who serve as a Sunday school teacher or a helper in Vacation Bible School or somebody who works with the children in the nursery, you recognize that this is often inconvenient. It's often difficult. It's often costly. Christian ministry is often difficult mentally, spiritually, physically, financially, and in other ways. Those who serve often experience pressure on every side, as he talks about here. Some are abused, some are killed because of their desire to serve Christ and his church. But like Paul and his colleagues, we must endure, we must persevere, continue serving no matter what the cost. And what is the thing that makes it all worthwhile? Why is this valuable? Why do we continue on? It may sound like I'm trying to dissuade and discourage anybody from going into Christian ministry, but it's really the exact opposite of that. I want to encourage people to pursue ministry, but with a realistic understanding of the pressures and the difficulties involved. There are good reasons to participate in ministry, and Paul tells us next in the text, as we look at these other words, that the results of the ministry make the trials worth the effort. But we'll have to wait for that until a little while from now. We've got a missionary coming up and other things, but we will get to the rest of this passage soon. So let's close in prayer.